Whether you drive a car, need a car, or just occasionally bum a ride with friends, you've come to the right place.
Join the editors of Consumer Guide Automotive as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
Here's your host, Tom Appel.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Thanks for joining us today. Hey, please give us a visit at consumerguide.com. Be sure to check out our Best Buy picks. This list is an excellent starting place if you are looking for a new car or crossover. You will also want to check out our blog for complete reviews of all the vehicles we're driving here at Consumer Guide, plus all sorts of other fun auto-related stuff. And if for some reason you have missed an episode of the Car Stuff Podcast, how would that happen? You can stream back episodes of the show right there on our homepage. If you have questions or comments for us, please drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com. That is carstuff@consumerguide.com. All right, let's see who is online with us today. She is the managing editor of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk and the driving force behind the Drive She Said blog. Welcome, Jill Simonillo.
Hello. How are you doing today? Hey, good. I'm a little bit jet lagged, actually. I'm still kind of a little bit asleep. So otherwise good.
Well, how many time zones were involved in your jet lag?
Only two. I just came back from California for something that we're going to discuss shortly.
Sounds good. So you're back today? You came back yesterday?
Last night.
So you're being a little whiny. A little whiny.
No whiny. Just more coffee. That's all I need.
Okay. All right. Yes, we are going to talk about what you looked at over the weekend or over earlier this week. All right. He is the senior editor here at Consumer Guide. He is president of the Midwest Automotive Media Association, and he is the sole proprietor of Gaucho Damon's mail order salsa, which he runs out of his office here at Consumer Guide. Welcome, Damon Bell.
Salsa. Tom says Tesla, and he says salsa.
I do. I do.
So you're focused on salsa. I'm focused on Gaucho.
Gaucho
Damon's.
That's the is that the Argentinian cowboy? Is that what a gaucho is?
Yeah. A Brazilian? I don't know. One of those.
Brazilian.
I was thinking it was a pair of pants that have wide legs, but
yeah, I think those pants are so named because they're worn by gauchos.
Yeah. Yes, I believe that's correct. Well, Damon, I just received my holiday 3-pack sampler of Gaucho Damon salsa.
What was your favorite flavor?
Well, the package includes the Damon Diablo, the Gaucho, the Gaucho Originale, and the Damon Pacifista, and, which is the mild. I'm going with the original, original.
Okay. Were the roasted jalapeno, was that palatable to you?
Yeah, no, that's good stuff.
I'm discussing that. Okay, all right.
A little expensive, $21.99 for the 3-pack sampler plus shipping, but very good. Good gift idea.
You get what you pay for.
Yeah, Gaucho Damon. All right.
Do we need to have a disclaimer to say, like, that don't try to go to that website because Tom messed up that whole thing?
I know. I can see people going to Google it, and they're like, but I want the Gaucho Damon Diablo.
Even funnier would be if there is such a place and some guys get an extra business today. All right. Our guest today is the founder and publisher of the excellent website Rides and Drives. He's a veteran of the advertising business and an enthusiast of most things that move under their own power, including cars, motorcycles, and planes. He's Harvey Briggs, and he's just written a beautiful new book about Rolls-Royce. We will welcome Harvey after the first break and talk about his book. You don't want to miss this conversation. But first, Jill.
Yes.
You're sleepy because whiny you were on the West Coast?
I was. So Hyundai had, I think, what is one of the first drive programs since the beginning of the pandemic. And, I think there have been a couple of other little ones going around. But this one, I think, was fairly a large program with a couple of waves and stuff like that. But one of the things they did is they launched a static version of the 2022 Hyundai Tucson. So we knew this was coming. We've seen pictures. We've seen some sneak peeks and things like that. But this was the first opportunity that we actually could see it in person, and that they did the full reveal with a lot of the specifications and information pertaining to the vehicle. So it was pretty cool to be able to see it in person. And I have to say, like, this SUV is like nothing I have seen before. I mean, just looking at the lighting signature alone on the front is very unusual, very different, and really kind of cool. But, you know, Hyundai has this history of kind of doing something radical with their next gen vehicles. And so in addition to this, I mean, I think it looks pretty gorgeous, but the gorgeous design, they are going to have a full gasoline ICE version. So the base powertrain is going to be a 2.5 liter engine that delivers 187 horsepower and 178 pound feet of torque. But they're, in addition to that, they're going to do two electrified powertrains. So they're going to have a straight hybrid, and then they're going to have a plug-in hybrid. So those will both operate off of a 1.6 liter four-cylinder engine, you know, mated to like a 44 kilowatt electric motor. But this is the first time Tucson has been a hybrid. And I think, other than the Ioniq, this is the first time that Hyundai has offered a plug-in hybrid. So, you know, in addition to a completely new design, they've got, you know, some new powertrains, some really cool interior features. And I didn't get to drive it, so that wasn't what I was there to drive. But I got to see it, sit in it, touch it, you know, crawl all over it. And it looks really good.
Yeah, I've got so many questions here. So first, we're talking about Hyundai's compact crossover, mm-hmm. Which is their revised launch into a very, very competitive segment. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, one that Hyundai's never been all that competitive in. So this is really interesting for them. This goes, now this is a 2022. So this is one of the first 2022s we've discussed, which is interesting.
Yes.
Goes on sale sometime, you said before we started, spring of 2021?
Yeah, so it'll go on sale in the spring of 2021. I think people are like, let's just skip ahead. Let's just move on to when things are going to be better. Let's go for 2022. But yeah, so it'll be available the spring of 2021. They haven't announced any pricing information yet because it's still a little bit far out that.
Yeah, Hyundai already has a vehicle that they sell with a gasoline engine and a plug-in hybrid and a pure electric vehicle, and that's the Ioniq. And for whatever reason, Hyundai, like a lot of other manufacturers, built a vehicle like that in some weird design that is neither crossover nor car, and no one likes it. So the Ioniq doesn't sell well. So putting it in a popular, putting those powertrain options in a popular compact crossover is a good idea. But for Hyundai, you mentioned that the design is radical, and this is a kind of a forward-looking vehicle. That's mm-hmm. good for Hyundai because they've had a hard time cracking into this segment. You've mm-hmm. got like your big four vehicles, right? The RAV4, the CR-V, the Equinox, and the Rogue. Huge sellers in that segment. Hyundai's not even doing half as well as those, so they need to distinguish themselves. But what else is going? So the exterior is radical. How's the interior?
You know, the interior looks pretty amazing as well. And, you know, it should come as no surprise they're targeting top safety pick for and like 5-star ratings. So there's a lot of standard safety technology in addition to like a really nice up level interior. Now, granted, we were probably looking at whatever is going to be their top tier trim. So probably the limited edition with heated and cooled seats and some nice finishing touches and, you know, comfortable seats and the, you know, really large 10.25 inch. Screen that'll be on the center stack. I took some pictures, so I'll and I wrote a story for Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk, so I'll send that your way as well. It looks really good. I'm most intrigued by the headlights, frankly, because you have this, like, it's a vertical stack of horizontal lines that kind of integrate into the grill, and they're the daytime running lights. And so they'll always be on, but when you turn all of the lights off, those lights become reflective and look like they're a part of the grill. I don't know. Cool. I was like literally enthralled by this. I probably stood in front of the vehicle both at night and during the day, just like staring.
Yeah, the design is certainly radical. Honestly, almost a little bit too much so for me, but sometimes that's a good thing because again, when the first time you see an all new design, it's oftentimes a good thing if it weirds you out and makes you a little bit uncomfortable, because that means they are pushing the envelope. It is interesting to me that the Hyundai does not seem to be sticking with design themes that they've brought out. This Tucson is radically different than the previous one, and the Elantra, it is kind of keeping with the Elantra, Jill, which I believe that's what you drove on this.
Yes. Present.
We'll be circling back to talk about that soon. I think when they showed the Elantra for the first time, we were commenting on the very increased body size. I called it.
Zorro slash, yes.
That may have
gotten mentioned in my article.
So there's a similar body side surfacing styling theme in this Tucson as well. And do you remember, it was just a couple years ago that they were talking about this new grill shape that Hyundai had that they said that was intended to sort of mimic the shape of a molten steel poured. And I'm like, as design motifs go, that's actually kind of cool. They're already past that now. I think and you compare the design of this Tucson to the Palisade, the previous kind of big league SUV introduction of Hyundai's, and it's like they've already moved on from that design and they're on to something else. So yeah, the no grass going under Hyundai's feet, I guess.
Yeah, well, you know, what is interesting.
Oh, go ahead, Jill.
I was going to say, one of the interesting things they said is that, like, there isn't really a distinct, every vehicle is going to look like this. So you look at Mazda, and every vehicle in the Mazda lineup looks pretty much the same, whether it's, you know, the Miata or, you know, the CX-9. They have very similar design architecture. But I think while the grills may look similar, like the design architecture for all of the Hyundai vehicles is just radically different. And they said that they want to be known by their lighting signatures. So the very distinctive lighting signatures. So like on the Sonata, you can see the light that goes up onto the hood. And, you know, then now you have the Tucson with the interesting daytime running lights. There will be some similarities, but I think each vehicle is going to be distinctive in and of itself.
I want to circle back to Damon's point, because Damon's made this point before, and it's pretty sharp observation. And that's that really good, interesting, progressive car design generally leaves you feeling a little bit uncomfortable when you first see it. Mm-hmm. And that's so true. And I think we learned that way back when BMW had gotten away from its very softly contoured look to the rougher creases of the bangle era. And I think people who are familiar with the auto industry remember the bangle butt as the vehicle was derisively called for a while because of the strange, very truncated end of the vehicle. And over time, those vehicles have come to look better to me.
Well,
they're very distinct. They're very much BMW, and there's very much a corporate language there. But I think it's interesting, Jill, to your point, that Hyundai is not going for a corporate look, which is interesting because so few manufacturers really pull one off. And it's really hard to make crossovers look like your other vehicles, because the hard points of that, you know, the roof height, where the windshield begins and where the tail begins, are all kind of written by law and cargo and passenger space needs. And there's just not a lot of variability there. It's hard to make crossovers look different from each other. So, all right. So this bit, go ahead, Damon.
Yeah, just one other thing I wanted to bring up in looking at Hyundai's press photos of this vehicle, and I'm checking out the interior. The interior dashboard shape is very interesting as well. There's kind of a sort of a cliff that goes all the way across the upper part of the dashboard, and the air vents are housed within that. And something else that I'm seeing a lot of, do you remember we're seeing you know, there used to be analog gauge clusters. Now most gauge clusters are going digital. They're virtual. Mm-hmm. So they can show a lot of different things. But I've noticed this in center stack infotainment screens that they are appear to be mimicking the design of iPads and tablets. Mm-hmm. That they are not integrated into the dash. It's sort of like a monolithic screen just stuck into the middle of the dashboard. And the fact that those are proliferating means I think they know that customers like them. And now this Tucson has a virtual cluster that also has that sort of standalone squared off tablet style feel. It's very interesting to me that the rest of the vehicle is so sharp and swoopy, and you know, lots of curved lines, but here the gauge cluster is this very almost defiantly rectangular shape plunked into the dash. So interior design trends seem to be kind of they're pushing forward in that respect as well.
Yeah, there seem to be two ways to handle that screen. We need the screen, right? That's a big deal. And every manufacturer lets you know how big the screen is. Before you now know a car's horsepower, you know, the size of the digital touchscreen. And you can go about that two ways. You can go about it the way Cadillac did with the new Escalade and completely own the thing and go with a giant 38-inch screen that is wholly, entirely encompassed by the dash and try to make that work. Or you can go with what a lot of manufacturers, like we're talking about now, like Mazda does rather famously, where it looks like a tablet that's been glued onto the surface. Either way, it kind of works for some people. And I think that the smaller the vehicle it is, the harder it is to incorporate that piece of video equipment into the car. All right, you know what we're going to do is take a break. When we come back, we are going to talk to Harvey Briggs of Rides and Drives. Stick around, we'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Thanks for sticking around. Hey, this is the part of the show when I strongly suggest you follow me on Twitter. I am Car Guy Tom, that is car_guy_Tom on Twitter. If you spot a cool, old, strange, or rare car on the road, post a picture of it on Twitter, use the car spotter hashtag, and I will share that with my followers. Okay, our guest today is the moving force behind the excellent website Rides and Drives. He's a veteran of the advertising business and a regular auto review fixture online and on TV. He's here today to talk to us about his new book, Rolls-Royce Motor Cars, Making a Legend. Welcome to the Car Stuff Podcast, Harvey Briggs.
Hey, thanks, Tom.
Harvey, you wrote a book.
I know. It only took me 60 years to write my first one. So.
The next one will be way easier.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
There's all sorts of stuff we could talk to you about, but this book is fabulous. Please tell us about your new book.
Sure, thanks. It really came about as just, I was in Goodwood a few years ago and walked through the assembly facility and just saw all these really interesting people working on the cars. And I started thinking, who are these people? How did they get there? And, you know, what did they have to do to learn to build the really they are finest motor cars in the world? And so we decided to tell that story in a book.
So when you say Goodwood, that is Rolls-Royce's manufacturing headquarters, correct?
Yes, yes. As they like to refer to it now, the Global Center of Luxury Manufacturing Excellence. Goodwood, it's the Goodwood Estate in Chichester in the UK, and that's owned by Lord March, who, when Rolls-Royce was looking for a new headquarters, he offered up part of his property to ensure that Rolls-Royce stayed in the UK and their manufacturing.
Okay.
Well, that's
so now
an interesting
when people
point
go, too. Yeah. So when people go to like the Goodwood event and stuff now, like Speed Week or whatever, Rolls-Royce always has a big presence at those events.
Yeah.
Is that a thing now? Is there stigma to the fact that Rolls-Royce is a property of BMW? Because it seems like Rolls-Royce operates pretty independently of that company.
Yeah, it does from a product standpoint. I mean, the platforms are not shared with any cars, regardless of what people say. The Ghost is not built on a 7 Series platform. You know, they have their own architecture. The engines and drivetrains are unique to Rolls-Royce. And then all the, you know, really important bits from a craft standpoint are all done in the UK. All the woodwork, all the leather work, all of that is done right there by these really interesting people.
And that is what I want to focus on, because I'm jealous of you, because you've got a very rare opportunity to spend some quality time in Rolls-Royce's manufacturing facility. And that's what you know, gave you the background and the access to make this book. So tell me how that came about, and how long did you spend there? Sure. And did you basically have a full run of the place to see how all the, you know, it's so fascinating to me, because more than any other vehicle being made today, Rolls-Royce stands alone in that they have got the cutting edge technology of a modern factory, but they're on top of that, there are all these resolutely old school craftsmanship procedures that you just can't replicate with technology. So the melding of those two, I think, is what's so fascinating.
Yeah. And the whole project, like I said, it started when I went to visit. We had this idea. My co-author, Simon Van Boy, who is a novelist and written a number of bestseller books, he had been talking to a publisher in the UK who said, hey, would you be interested in doing a book on Rolls-Royce? And he said, well, I'd love to, but we need to get Harvey involved, because he knows the people at Rolls-Royce really well and can get us permission. So we kind of, he brought the publisher and I brought Rolls-Royce to the table, and we pitched them this idea. And it was really funny. I was on the Ghost launch, or not Ghost, on Cullinan launch out in Wyoming, and Richard Carter, the director of communications for Rolls-Royce, was there. And in the briefing room, they had pictures of all the associates who worked on the cars. And I thought, well, this is interesting, because I want to do a book on this. And he turned to Jerry Spahn and said, Jerry, how come I haven't heard of this before? Immediately the next day, we were on the phone working out the details of what kind of access we'd have, how long we'd need to be there. They videotaped, videoed all the interviews we did. So they're going to create their own videos
Up
on the website once the book is released as well. So it was really a cooperative effort. And as such, I mean, we had full run of the factory. Our photographer even got into the clean room where they assemble the gallery. You know, she had to dress in head to toe in a full clean suit, and they had to disinfect her camera and all this stuff, because they can't have any dust in those in that gallery area. So we got access there. And one of the interesting things, Damon, that goes to your point of this blend of craftsmanship and technology, is when you walk in there, it is the quietest and the most unfactory-like factory you'll ever be in, because there are no robots on the factory floor. All the work in the assembly process, once the cars leave the paint shop, there are no robots. The only two robots in the factory apply paint to the cars, because that's the only thing they found that they could do better. And the people who buy Rolls-Royces, they really appreciate the fact that these are handmade, even to the point where the bolts that connect the chassis, the platform and the body together, those are hand done. the guys, but they're supported by technology. The torque wrenches they use are Wi-Fi enabled, and they connect to the system. And so they know exactly how tight those bolts were tightened. And they also measure the angle at which they were put in. So if they were put in askew, they'll be worn. So it's really an interesting, you know, blend of technology and craftsmanship deploying that technology in support of craftsmanship.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the things that just fascinates me about Rolls-Royce is the utter customization that is available. I think in the book you said virtually every single Rolls-Royce produced is customized in some way. And that just blew my mind. I mean, I knew Rolls-Royce is like a customized vehicle. I've seen the dealerships. And in fact, like the very first car I ever wrote about was a Rolls-Royce Phantom. So, you know, I understand the process, but it just didn't strike home until you actually put that in your book and said, every vehicle is customized. And so, you know, you talk about the people, like the photos of the people lining the walls of the that are producing the vehicle. And I think in the book, you mentioned one guy who is hand painting the stripes, and they sent him to Germany for 6 weeks to paint the stripes and learn how to paint straight. And he was there for 6 months. But like, I just think that there's this insane amount of customizations. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit, because you've had such amazing access. I was wondering if you'd talk a little bit about what like the coolest customization you have seen is, and maybe like what the weirdest customization you've seen is.
Sure. Well, it's interesting because there's so many places that you can do it. And I had talked to some of the folks in there and I said, where does it end? Where do you stop customizing? And essentially they say, we'll do anything as long as it doesn't affect safety and performance. We can't do anything in those areas. But to the point of at the beginning of the book, we have that very special swept tail Phantom that was made, that was a one-on-one coachwork. So it was all custom bodywork. So that's kind of the very extreme example of it. If you look at the woodwork in that, that was inspired by a yacht that the owner owned. So the woodwork on that was pretty incredible. The newest area where they're doing a ton of customization work is in the Starlight Headliner now. Because not only is it, you know, it started as, oh, it's a pattern of the night sky, and you have these fiber optic lights that are, you know, 1300 of them in the ceiling. Well, now they do full color LED fiber optics. So you can get a full color spectrum in that. And people are doing all kinds of crazy patterns and colors in that. The other thing is in the embroidery work that they're doing now, and especially in the Headliner and in doors and seats on the leather, they're doing really incredible stuff. There was another of the cars in there is the Wraith Falcon, I think it's called, and it's this beautiful blue car, but inside they have this bird swooping down from the blue sky with clouds and everything around it. And you see the initial drawing that they did to sketch it out and get approval from the client. And then you have the technical drawing of how they worked to make it happen. And then you have the final piece with, you know, that had been embroidered by the team with their machines that they use to support that. So it's really that kind of stuff is amazing. And you know, you talk about everyone being customized. They're not all widely customized. It's just everyone's a little different because Rolls-Royce only makes 5,000 cars a year. And none of them are made without an order. Right. So even if a car is coming to the interesting in most of the world, owners special order their Rolls-Royce and they get involved and they do it. In the United States, our culture is, no, I want to walk into a dealership and buy a car. Right. Mm-hmm. that even applies to some people who want to buy a Rolls Royce. And so what happens is dealers order cars specifically either for customers they know it's time for their next Rolls Royce, or they know their market really well, and they'll order certain features and certain types of design elements or colors that they know will sell in their market. So no, there isn't a Rolls Royce on that line that it hasn't been ordered by someone, be it a dealer or a customer.
Harvey, I wanted to ask you about a particular photograph in the book, and this speaks to the bespoke customization of the cars. There is a rear seat view of a car with a very light blue interior and what appears to be a cherry blossom tree reproduction headliner. This is very Japanese looking to me, and it's utterly gorgeous. Do you know anything about this car or the owner?
Yeah, that was Phantom Serenity, and that's about a 4 or 5 year old project that they did. They actually debuted it in Geneva, and it was a way to demonstrate, again, their ability to really customize a vehicle. And they worked with this client who is anonymous. Sometimes their clients don't like their names out there. But they were enamored with silk and the Japanese culture. So if you'll notice, the seats on that are not leather, they're silk. The door panels are silk. And the interesting thing is the coach line painter, Mark Court, he did the little flourishes at the end of the coach line with the Japanese style painting. He said that was one of his favorite projects he got to do because he really got to do something much more artistic than just that straight line. And he does a lot of embellishments, but that one was particularly interesting.
Yeah. There's a jaw-dropping photos of finished cars, but what I'm fascinated with every bit as much as that is the factory photos and the portraits of the craftspeople that make these vehicles. And it's amazing to see a gallery. You know, they've got the swatches of fabric. You can kind of see the consultation room where I'm assuming they probably have clients come in to sort of go over and pick things. They've got what they call speed forms, which are probably like 1/10 scale shapes that show how a given paint color will look as the light hits it from different angles and such. But what was striking to me, there's beautiful portraits of the people who make these cars. And I was heartened to see that there were lots of younger technicians that are by the Rolls factory. I guess if I would have had to guess, I would have assumed that they were older workers, but there's lots of, who look to be 20 and 30 somethings, staffing the factory. So I'm assuming you got to talk to some of those people. I'm assuming there were some very interesting stories there.
Yeah, it was. They have a very strong apprentice program that brings in young people all the time. And I'm talking about kids who are 18, 19, 20 years old can even start in that apprentice program while they're attending higher education. Because even though, it's a trade, it's really, there's a worldliness that goes into, I think, the manufacturing of these cars. You need an understanding, I think, of more than just technically how to do it, but the world in which these cars are created and live. One of the things that the designers always talk about is they come up with these ideas and then they challenge the craftspeople to help create them, and it goes back and forth and back and forth. There's a real collaborative process. But one of the things that struck me was the fact that the workforce is so diverse from, probably, very close to 50-50 male-female. And they have associates there from 50 countries around the world. Alexandra Benga, for example, the woman who does a lot of the Starlight headliners, she came from, I believe it was Poland. You know, and there are people from all over who are building these cars. Another great story was a young woman who works in the sewing department, and she's now a technical lead and has, you know, leads a group of people. She's probably in her mid to late 20s, started as in their apprenticeship program. And she was, as she described, I was a lost teenager, and I love to sew and do all this stuff. But someone said, oh, you should apply for the apprenticeship at Rolls-Royce. And she had no idea about it and went and applied. And now she's, you know, doing, you know, great work on these fabulous cars.
Well, Harvey, I am nothing but impressed that someone I know wrote a book. but not only that, this is
Damon's written a couple, hasn't he?
Yeah, I've written several.
but Harvey, how can anyone who loves cars or just loves art get a hold of this book?
Great. Well, it's available for pre-order now, and it will be shipping on December 7th, so in plenty of time for Christmas. There are a couple places you can order it. My preferred choice is bookshop.org. It is a bookselling website that actually takes a part of the proceeds of their sales and gives them to local independent bookshops in your area, which, you know, as an author and someone who loves books, I really appreciate the role that independent bookstores play. So I would recommend people go there to do their shopping for this book. But if you're really happy, it's on Amazon. And you can just search my name and you'll find it.
All right. That is Rolls-Royce Motor Cars Making a Legend. Harvey, the book is awesome. Thank you for joining us today. We will have to have you back on the show sometime soon.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun.
Awesome. That is Harvey Briggs. You can check out his stuff at ridesanddrives.com. All sorts of good stuff there. We're going to take a break and be right back.
Welcome back to the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Thanks for sticking around. Hey, Jill.
Hey, yeah.
Jill, you're active on Honey Jug. How can the kids find you there?
Honey Jug just sounds so wrong. Not Honey Jug, but Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. Hey, TikTok, not Honey Jug. How's that? But yes, so Jill Ciminiello, J-I-L-L-C-I-M-I-N-I-L-L-O, all one word. And that's where you can find me on any social media that actually exists. Not Honey Jug.
Damon, you're a jugger. Tell us about it.
I think you've gravely insulted the online, the avid online Winnie the Pooh fan community. That sounds, Honey Jug sounds either something you really don't want to Google at work or online Winnie the Pooh fans.
Either way, there's really no point.
Oh, I forgot. Yes, I'm on Twitter at David Bell Cars, not on Honey Jug.
All right. Kids, it's quiz time. I hope you're ready.
Sure.
Yes.
All right. Today's quiz is spelling and style, which sounds like all sorts of fun. The Car Stuff Power Quiz is brought to you by Tom on Twitter. Follow Car Guy Tom today, won't you? All right. This is spelling and style. I hope you guys are ready. Jill, I'm going to start with you. Our first topic is hard to spell Buicks. Jill, no cheating.
Okay.
Spell rendezvous.
Oh, can I write it out first?
No.
R-E-N-D-E-Z-V-O-U-S.
That sounded right. Jill gets a point. Damon, are you ready?
Sure.
Hard to spell Buick. Spell Terraza.
T-E-R-R-A-Z-A.
All right, you guys are tied with one each. Terraza, of course, Buick's forgotten minivan. I might have spelled that with one R and two Zs, but you guys did good. Damon, which of the following alphanumeric model names incorporates a hyphen after the first character of its name? Are you ready?
Sure.
Honda CR-V, Scion FRS, Suzuki SX4, or Toyota CHR?
And you're asking which one has the hyphen after the first letter?
That's correct.
Toyota CHR.
Jill, same question to you. CR-V, FRS, SX4, or CHR?
Yeah, I'm like spelling these in my head. I'm a much more visual person. If I could write it down, that would be so much better. So you're saying hyphen after the first letter?
After the first letter. CR-V, FRS, SX4, which was a Suzuki, and yeah, the Toyota CHR.
I know it's not the middle two. I'll say CHR.
All right, you're both right. Hmm. Yeah, it's CR-V, FR-S, Suzuki SX4, which no one remembers. No.
Yeah, I remember
that,
it.
That had no hyphen at all.
No hyphen at all. And CHR breaks the mold with the hyphen after the C. Very strange, and it kind of makes me uncomfortable.
I knew that one pretty well because I've corrected it a million times in our own review.
Probably from Tom, corrected Tom.
I've been getting you wrong. All right. Hey, Jill, what is the official plural of Prius? Is it Prius, Prii, or Priuses?
Okay, so what I want to say is there was actually a conversation about this several auto shows ago.
Yeah, there's an official Toyota plural.
But I don't think I don't think I agree with their official plural. So I think the official plural is Priuses, but my personal plural I think is appropriate because I'm the geek who took four semesters of Latin in college, is Prii. But if we're talking Toyota official, I'm going to say Priuses.
Yeah, you're getting whiny again. What's your official answer to this question?
Priuses.
Priuses. Damon, what is the official plural of Prius? Is it Prius, Prii, or Priuses?
I believe it was Prii. I think Toyota had a whole PR campaign about it. Prii.
Yeah. Damon gets a point here.
So they did not disappoint me. It should be Prii.
You should be satisfied because that was their official. They made a big deal out of it, as I recall.
I remember they talked voting? About it. Yeah, they did voting.
Yeah. So
that,
I guess
that makes me happy.
I guess there's more Latin fans out there than you might have expected, Jill, because the public has spoken, apparently.
Then I am happy. I should have expected more from Toyota. I am sorry.
Damon, what is the official written style for GM semi-autonomous technology? Is it Super Cruise, two words, Super Cruise, one word, or Super Cruise, one word with a capital C in the middle of it?
Oh, boy. I think it's just two words.
All right. Jill, of course. Same question to you.
Yeah, I think it's just two words as well.
You both get a point. It is Super Cruise. Soon to be available in the Cadillac Escalade and a bunch of other caddies. Jill, what is the official written style for Ford's EcoBoost engine technology? Is it EcoBoost two words, EcoBoost one word, or EcoBoost one word with a capital B in the middle of it?
I'm going to go with option C, EcoBoost with a capital B in the middle.
All right. Damon, same question to you.
I will agree with Jill.
Damon, you are 5 for 5 today.
Well done. Yeah.
Jill, you're 4 for 5, which means you're the loser. I'm sorry.
I'm the loser. Stupid Prii.
Stupid Prii. How many times have I heard that? All right. But we still go to the bonus question because that's what we do. This goes to Damon first. Damon, which of the following is not a Wham song? Wham, of course, the band that made George Michael famous. Are you ready?
Sure.
That was a really long pause. All right. Your options, Damon, are for the fake Wham song are Wham Rap, Young Guns, Battle Stations, or Wham Blues.
Oh, man. And which one is the fake?
Which is the fake? You have a couple of Wham cassettes, don't you?
I do not. Oh. I'll issue a counter quiz question. Can you name, it's George Michael, obviously, who was the other Wham member? Anybody know?
Yeah, no.
I believe it's Andrew Ridgely. So,
oh.
If I get this wrong, I would like a bonus point for knowing that.
You get a half point. You get a half point for Ridgely.
Andrew Ridgely is getting together with DJ Jazzy Jeff and
the Fresh Prince.
And Oates from Hall & Oates, maybe. They can do other guys' super group or something. I'm sorry. Go on. Can you please read those ridiculous song names again?
I can. Wham Rap, Young Guns, Battle Stations, Wham Blues.
I don't see them rapping at all, so I will say Wham Rap.
All right. Jill, same question to you.
That first inclination, since I'm a loser anyway, because it seems like they have a little bit of a whammy theme going on. What were the middle two again?
Young Guns
Battlefield.
Battle Stations.
And then the other one was?
Wham Blues and Wham Raps. Wham Rap, I'm sorry.
But there was Battle Station. Young Gun. I'm going to go Battle Stations.
You guys are both wrong. Wham Blues is the fake. And I suspect if you're looking for the world's least authentic hip hop experience, Wham Rap might be the song for you.
Is it? Have you listened to it? Is it in fact a rapper? Okay. Because it could be it could be some sort of odd spoken word thing.
Now I'm going to have to go find that on YouTube immediately.
For the record, all of these, the real ones, are on their greatest hits, 1981 to 1986. You know, instead of Harvey's book, just get their Wham greatest hits.
No.
No. Get the book. That's going to be the way better purchase.
Hey, Damon.
Yes.
Damon, what's going on at the CG Daily Drive blog?
We've got another bumper crop of great articles, including... I'm usually not stumped by, I thought I knew every obscure TV show that had some kind of truck or automotive cool car tie-in, but I was completely unaware that there was a Canadian TV show called Cannonball.
Yeah.
And this, you posted an article about the GMC Cannonball, which is a very uniquely styled cab over engine, old school semi truck that got its name apparently from a Canadian TV show. Was it from the 50s?
Late 50s, early 60s, I think.
Okay. Man, and that's sort of ahead of its time, because I'm thinking the sort of two traveling cool guys in a vehicle, that show concept didn't really take hold until later. I don't know when Route 66 came out, the Corvette. And then, of course, there was Moving On with with Claude Atkins in the 70s. But yes, we're really going into the weeds here on obscure TV shows, but it's an interesting GMC pickup truck. And you even found a YouTube clip of that show. So if you're a fan of interesting looking old school semi trucks and weird TV shows, you can check out that article. We've got a couple of new vehicle reviews, very much on the opposite side of the spectrum. We had a Ford F-350, a 7.3-liter V8. Huge heavy duty pickup truck. I remember photographing this vehicle and having to stand several steps further back than I normally do to fit everything in. So a big heavy hauling truck. And then, wow, speaking of exotic luxury vehicles, we didn't have a Rolls Royce. We did have a Rolls Royce Dawn last week. Yeah. We published an article on the Aston Martin Vantage Coupe. Super sleek, exotic looking GT sports car. Sticker price on that was $170,231. So you could buy two of them, at least two of them, for the cost of the Rolls Royce Dawn that we had. So very, very sexy. Even in our test vehicle was in a very understated China gray color. But even in that understated color, really a knockout vehicle.
I don't think I'm out of line saying that that's the best looking car we've had through the office this year.
Yes, I would probably have a hard time arguing with you on that.
Yeah, great looking car.
As much as I'd like to. So, yeah, we had those reviews. I can't remember if we talked about this last week or not, but we had a wide body Challenger Scat Pack in a really cool color called Hellraisin. Purple color. That's up there as well. And then finally, we had Tom did a vintage ad gallery on called Streamline Madness, which is a collection of vintage automotive ads that tout streamlining and aerodynamic performance. So it's very interesting to see how that has been employed in auto advertising over the years.
Yeah, and that article is worth looking at if only for one single ad, and that is an ad for Czechoslovakian automaker Tatra that in the 30s was designing cars that no one had any idea what they were so far ahead of their time. It was crazy.
Yeah, it really is one of the coolest logos I've seen in quite a while.
But yeah, Tatra is a totally underappreciated brand, and they were doing really advanced stuff really early in the days of the automobile. But kids, we've done it again. We have run out of time.
Yet again.
Crazy.
Anyway, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. Special thanks to our guest today, Harvey Briggs. You want to check out his book. We will link to many of the ways that you can order that book. Thanks to Jill Simonillo of Rides and No, where are you from? SUV Talk.
Yes.
Damon, you work around here someplace. Where, Consumer Guide. Damon Bell of Consumer Guide.
That's right.
Yeah. Again, I'm under-caffeinated. As always, thanks to producer Lady B and the good folks here at WCPT AM 820 in Chicago. It should be more difficult to get this done during the COVID thing, but it just hasn't, and we appreciate that. As always, thanks to my radio mentor, Steve and Johnny. You guys are the best. As always, you can reach us at carstuff@consumerguide.com. That is carstuff@consumerguide.com. Let's talk about cars a little bit more next week.